Good Monday there, football fans. Welcome to the Soccer Central podcast. James Charbonnier alongside John Molinaro. As always, we are getting down to the wire. Only a couple of weeks left before this season is behind us. We'll get to the Premier League story and some TFC in their home opener later in today's show. But of course, this week is all about European football, J-Mo.
The champions!
Oh, I knew it. I just knew it. You're ruining
it. You know you like that song.
Good name of this show. Yes, Champions League semi-finals, second legs. We know what's going on there. Barcelona up and Bayern 3-0. Juventus up and Real Madrid 2-1. A man who is writing feverishly about both these games for, I'm sure, numerous publications. From Glasgow, Scotland, is Graham Rutherford. Graham, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, James. Always good to be on.
All right, well, let's start with the Barcelona-Bayern Munich game, shall we? 3-0, as I mentioned there, Barcelona from the first leg. But I don't know about you, Graham, but I feel somewhat ripped off here. When the draw was made, we were so excited. You know, these are arguably the two top teams in European football. At the time of the draw, probably the two in-form teams in European football. But Bayern Munich, once again, crippled through injuries. And they've been dealing with injuries all year long, but they've been so deep that they've managed without, you know, certain players. But now it's four games on the hop with a loss for this Bayern Munich team. And it seems as if this could have been something really special, Graham, but it turns out that Bayern are just burning out at the wrong time.
Yeah, that's right. This game hasn't really lived up to expectations. You know, it's worth remembering that it took 77 minutes for Barcelona to actually score the first goal last week. So even for most of the game last week, we were still thinking that this game was poised on a knife edge and that the second leg would mean something. But as you say, I think there were two factors for Bayern Munich in the first leg. Number one was the injuries, as you mentioned, in particular to Arjen Robben. I think that's the crucial one for Bayern Munich. They don't have that outlet on the attack that the Dutchman brings. And the second one was the manic decision from Guardiola to go 3v3 at the back for the first 20 minutes of the game, which I don't think anyone really understood. Whatever he was trying to do, it didn't work. And that really put Bayern Munich on the back foot from the start.
Down 3-0, going back home, Graham. I think on paper anyway, or according to most pundits, this tie is essentially all but over. Do you agree? I mean, what can Bayern do to salvage this, if they can at all?
Well, I don't see them actually overturning that three-goal deficit. I do see them putting up a bit of a fight. Their home form in the Champions League has been exceptional this season. They've won all five games. They've only conceded one goal, and that one goal was conceded in the 7-1 thumping of Porto in the last round. So, they have got good form at home, and I do expect them to attack a little bit more. I think Guardiola in his press conference the other day was saying just that they need to attack Barcelona more. They need to push them further back down into pitch and control the game a bit more. So I am a little bit excited just to see those two teams go at each other. In the context of the competition, I think it's pretty much a foregone conclusion and Barcelona will be taking their place in the final.
Now Pep has refuted those reports in the British media linking him with Man City this summer. He says he will stay at Bayern Munich, at least for the remainder of his contract, just one more year. Given what you saw in the first leg, given that potentially his team's been blown out now twice in 2 years at this stage, do you think there is a chance that he may indeed be given his walking papers? As ludicrous as it seems to most rational people, we know how Bayern Munich works, right? And it's a little bit different to most clubs.
Yeah, they are a little bit different to most clubs. And I think if if Jurgen Klopp hadn't resigned at Borussia Dortmund there a few weeks ago, I think Guardiola would have been given next season. I think he probably still will stay for next season. However, it has to be playing on the powers that be at Bayern Munich that they could go and get Klopp, and that could be an option for them. Also, Manchester City have been long-term admirers of Pep Guardiola. He's the man. They've actually already built their club in a way to prepare for his arrival. They've got those former Barcelona directors at the club already. And they've been kind of signing the type of players they think that Pep Guardiola would like. So they have been building for his arrival. So I say there's more chance of it just now than I would have said a few weeks ago, but I think expect Guardiola to be there next season.
I've got to ask you though, you mentioned Klopp's name there, and I know it's all purely hypothetical here, but he's left Borussia Dortmund, and most fans who still revere him, they understand why he's leaving. However, if he left for Bayern Munich, that would tarnish him, wouldn't it, with the Borussia Dortmund faithful?
It would tarnish him with the Borussia Dortmund faithful because, of course, one of the main reasons I think he's leaving is that he can't compete with teams like Bayern Munich in the transfer market, and they've poached a few of Dortmund's best players. So it would be highly hypocritical for him to go to Bayern Munich. However, when that carrot is dangled in front of you, it's difficult not to bite. So if that option did come up for him, it would be interesting to see what his decision would be.
Getting back to Barcelona, Graham, is this their tournament to lose? I mean, do you see either of Juventus or Real Madrid able to give them a serious game in the final?
Yeah, I can see them both giving them a good game. I think, especially in terms of Real Madrid, it's important to remember that in the two games that Real Madrid have actually played against Barcelona this season, they've been the better team. If there's a team in La Liga that seems to have Barcelona's number a little bit, it's Real Madrid, which of course is unfortunate for Barcelona. That's not what you want from your biggest rivals. I've watched Juventus a few times this season as well, but even still, I was surprised at how excellent they were in the first leg of the semi-final. So if they can replicate that kind of performance, then yeah, I think they could give Barcelona problems as well.
Now, Leo Messi, we saw what he did last week in the space of about 3 minutes. Last year, we were talking about the potential decline of Leo Messi. He had a terrible year, only 46 goals overall last year.
Slacker.
Slacker. But, I mean, he definitely took a step back, and we know that. You know, injuries for the first time maybe in his career, aside from early in his career, were beginning to slow him down. But this year, he seems to have just bounced back, and then some, especially in 2015. Do you think he's back to his very best, as good as we saw 3-4 years ago?
Yes, absolutely, James. No doubts about it. I think this is the best I've ever seen Leo Messi play, and it's actually been remarkable, the turnaround, not just Messi, but Barcelona have had in 2015. There was a game in January, they lost to Real Sociedad, the David Moyes' team, of course, and Luis Enrique seemed to be on the way out. Messi was benched for that game, and it's really just incredible how things have turned around since then. I think the signing of Luis Suarez actually seems to have liberated Messi. Suarez is quite happy doing the dirty work, and he's quite happy drifting out wide, leaving Messi to pretty much seek out space wherever he can. And Neymar does his fair share of that as well. So credit to Luis Enrique for having three players who surely must have big egos and must want to service themselves, but they all seem to know their roles and their responsibilities in that team, and it's all for the benefit of the best player in the world, Leo Messi.
In the other semi-final on Wednesday, Juventus travels to Madrid to take on Real, having won the first leg 2-1 in Turin last week. What did you make of the Italians' first leg performance, and do you think they can duplicate it?
I was very impressed, John. I've watched them a few times this season. I've been impressed generally with how they've done under Max Allegri this year. But I didn't see them putting in that kind of standard of performance on that kind of stage. And I certainly think they can duplicate it. The way Real Madrid are playing at the moment, things aren't quite clicking for them. Of course, they've got their injury problems as well. They're desperately missing Luka Modric. And that'll be crucial in the centre midfield because, of course, that's where Juventus seem to be so strong. And, of course, I think I'm right in saying, John, you correct me if I'm wrong, I think Paul Pogba made his return at the weekend.
He did, yeah, and he scored as well.
Exactly, yeah. So he could feature as well, and that just makes them even stronger in the centre of field. So I think just on the basis of people like Cristiano Ronaldo and Gareth Bale, I would maybe fancy Real Madrid to edge through. However, I wouldn't be surprised if it's Juventus that take the place in the final.
It's going to be fascinating, and for Real to progress, you would think that they need more from Gareth Bale, who was very poor in that last game, and clearly he's not 100% fit. Do you think, though, that it's just as simple as that? It's a fitness issue, or is there more to Bale's relative struggles this year at Real Madrid?
I think he's lacking in so much confidence, which is really quite sad to see. Bale's a player who pretty much needs a team built around him, I feel. And at Spurs, he had that. The whole team was built to his strength. And in that sense, he's a Cristiano Ronaldo-like. He's a very similar player to Cristiano Ronaldo. And in any other team, maybe barring Barcelona, of course, but in any other team, he would be the star. Of course, he's playing at Real Madrid alongside Ronaldo, and he's expected to be a supply line for Ronaldo. I don't think it's a role that suits him particularly. He's struggling with injury, of course, at the moment, but there were signs yet at the weekend against Valencia that he's a little bit cheesed off, and that was good to see from him, a little bit of fight from him. So it'll be interesting to see if he can maintain that in the Champions League.
You mentioned Luka Modric before when talking about Real Madrid, and obviously his injury is a bit of a problem for Real. Maybe you can just talk about what you've seen from the Croatian this year and what he brings to Real in midfield, because for my money, I think he's been one of the team's unheralded heroes.
Absolutely. I would actually go as far to say that although Ronaldo is of obvious importance to Real Madrid, beyond him, I think Luka Modric is Real Madrid's most important player. He's the man who makes them tick in the centre midfield, and especially against a team that are going to be so well set up as Juventus, he'd be crucial for that, breaking them down and picking the passes. Of course, he's not the man maybe to play in the counter-attack, but more often than not, Real Madrid come up against teams that like to sit deep. I'm not saying Juventus are going to do that, but in recent weeks, they faced teams that like to sit deep, and Modric is the one to pick the passes, and they've really missed him, really missed him. They've not found someone who can do the same role as he can.
Yes, certainly Sergio Ramos, for all his battling qualities, isn't quite the same as Modric. About Ramos, I mean, I'm a big fan of the guy, certainly as a centre-half. I mean, we know what he can do. Do you think he's back at the centre of defence for this one, rather than that midfield role where he's been in recent weeks?
Well, here's the thing. I'm not even sure if Ramos warrants a place at all in the team, because, I think Pepe was being quite impressive. He was probably Real Madrid's best player, actually, against Valencia. I think Varane as well has proven himself. His pace is very important. So where does Ramos fit into the team? And I don't think in midfield he's been particularly great. It worked against Atletico Madrid. But, I mean, Manchester United play Phil Jones in midfield every so often. It doesn't mean he's a midfielder. You know? So I think Real Madrid need to go with someone, even if it's someone like Ilir Amendi, who I don't particularly rate very highly, but he's still more technical on the ball than Ramos is and more suited to that role. So I'm not really sure where Ramos plays, to be honest.
As we noted earlier, Paul Pogba returned to the lineup for Juventus on the weekend. He scored against Cagliari in a 1-1 draw. He's become one of the hottest sort of prospects and next big young things in the world game. Talk about him being linked to several clubs with transfer fees in the neighborhood of 60 or 70 million euros. I guess a two-part question. One, should Juventus cash in on him? And if so, I guess the second part is, should Pogba move on? I mean, he's done quite well at Juventus since joining Manchester United. He's guaranteed playing time. Is this the best situation for him, or should he try his luck somewhere else now?
Well, in response to your first question, John, I actually think even for 60, 70 million, I'm not sure if that, in this market, of course, we're talking about huge sums of money here, and players shouldn't really be worth this kind of money. But in the market, I don't think that actually values Pogba high enough. I think he's the next greatest player in the world. I think 60, 70 million, Juventus, even if they were to spend that money fully on one player, I don't think would find someone as good as Pogba. So if that's the price talking about, I would maybe hold out for a little bit more. And that's the thing. I think a club would actually, in time, pay more for Pogba. The second point, I think there's always that lure of playing for someone like Real Madrid or Barcelona.
Right.
I think Pogba's good enough for one of those teams. I think that's the kind of level he should be aiming for, maybe even if Bayern Munich came in for him. I think he's a level higher than someone like Manchester City or Manchester United. I think he is maybe even the best midfielder in the world at the moment. Certainly the best combative box-to-box all-round midfielder, I think. So he should be looking for a team that matches that ability and matches, his ambition. And if that move doesn't materialise this summer, then maybe he should hold off.
Yeah, and I'm sure his agent's playing the game very well. You know, he's pretty switched on, as Sir Alex Ferguson probably found out to his chagrin. Graham, as always, thanks so much. Enjoy the games, mate, and we'll talk to you soon, hopefully.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on, and enjoy the games yourself.
Cheers, Graham.
That's Graham Ruthven. You can follow Graham on Twitter at Graham Ruthven. That's Graham, G-R-A-H-A-M, Ruthven, R-U-T-H-V-E-N. Definitely worth a follow. Boy knows his football, that's for sure. Yeah. It's funny about Pogba, J-Mo, and I know just before he came on air today, I saw Adam Digby was tweeting about reports that he'd handed in a transfer request, and right. I know Adam was dismissing the reports, saying, mm-hmm. you know, he smells a rat, so to speak, but listen, it's Paul Pogba. And his agent are pretty ruthless when they're deciding on their client's future. It'd be an awful time to hand in a transfer request.
24 hours before a semi-final? Absolutely
yeah.
would.
Yeah. And just after you've just got back from injury as yeah. well. But the fact that Juve are in this position without Paul Pogba, I mean, it just
well.
Shows. And
yeah.
that, I mean, the midfield, you talk about midfield depth, and we talk about Bayern Munich, obviously, and Real Madrid and Barcelona, but man, that Juve midfield, they've missed some big name players, some big stretches this year, but they've continued to play great football.
Yeah, well, they've got some depth there that I don't think goes completely noticed by soccer world. When you look at players the caliber of Arturo Vidal, Claudio Marchisio, who I think has been sensational this year, Andrea Pirlo, for all his you know, his age and his slowing down a little bit, I think is still a wonderful servant to the team. And then you've got guys like Lichtsteiner, who kind of plays that sort of wing back position and adds depth on the wings. I think he just doesn't get the recognition he deserves. So there's quality there in that midfield, even aside from Pogba. So
Pereira was being
another one,
great, and he was
fantastic
on the bench last match for Storaro, which no one saw coming.
Right.
And Storaro played really well.
He played really well. I mean, that was certainly a tactical decision that I question. I saw that when he went.
But it was to protect Evra, basically,
yes.
wasn't it?
Yeah. But it turned out well in the end. And I think the idea was to save Pereira for late in the game so that he can kind of run at tired
yeah,
Real
right.
Madrid legs. And it nearly pulled off because he nearly connected with Llorente on a goal. So.
Yeah, the back post.
Yeah. So it was very close.
And don't forget, you know, the Storaro selection, if you get a chance, Google it. There's a great GIF. It shows that Hummus crossbar header late in the game for Real.
Mm-hmm.
Diving header, and it was off the crossbar. Wow. But you actually slow it down. This GIF shows it. Storaro actually gets his toe to the ball and actually deflects the ball from Hummus's head onto the crossbar. It's an incredible, incredible piece of athletic defending.
Oh, there you go.
And that moment justified his selection, if you ask
yeah.
me, and give Max Allegri a lot of credit for that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I hold up my hand. I was very skeptical when Juventus decided to hire Max Allegri in the offseason because, A, he's replacing someone like Antonio Conte, who was, you know, just a favorite son of the club, both as a player and as a coach. And I really question whether Allegri, who essentially was the guy who pushed Pirlo out of AC Milan, was the right guy to, you know, lead Juventus far in a Champions League campaign. But full credit to him. I full props.
And in Allegri's, you know, credit, people say he was the reason why Pirlo was shoved out of AC Milan. But the entire team was going through a philosophical change.
Sure.
Driven from the top.
Yeah.
We must get younger
right.
and move these stars out. We saw the same year, you saw Rino Gattuso leave. You saw, I think, Pippo Inzaghi retired that year as well, did he not? Was
that
it the same
sounds
year?
Sounds about right.
Around
yeah.
about that same time, though.
Yeah.
Nesta left for MLS.
Right.
Like these legendary players, it was a brand new let's start again, so
right.
to speak, and it hasn't gone very well.
Right.
That being said, right, but it wasn't like, you know, he had an issue with Pirlo. I don't
know. No. I agree with the philosophy and what they did, but I think they were a bit premature in letting Pirlo go because he was clearly someone, and as history has sort of proven us right, clearly had plenty of gas left mm-hmm. in the tank, right? So, and the fact that they let him go for nothing, I mean, Juventus didn't
yeah.
pay a transfer fee, much like they didn't with Paul Pogba. And I think that's something that goes unnoticed as well. Like Juventus, they can spend big sometimes, but they're very astute.
They're shrewd.
They're very shrewd.
They're on the ball, right? I mean, they were tracking that Pogba United
yeah.
deal from the get-go.
Exactly.
It's always linked with Juventus.
Yeah. So, I mean, they got, you know, if they sell him on for 60 or 70 million, or if it's more, as Graham Ruthven suggested that it might be, you know, that's pure profit, you know,
oh, yeah.
and that's going to potentially be able to be reinvested in two or three more players, maybe not of the same quality, but certainly of world-class status. So, I mean, as you said, Juventus is very, very shrewd.
What did Tevez cost him?
Peanuts, too. I mean,
yeah.
not peanuts, but
relatively
it was less than
speaking,
it was
a 29 goal scorer, is peanuts.
Yeah, it was, I want to say, around 12 million.
It sounds
it was less than
right.
20.
Yeah,
it was definitely less than 20.
Because they were getting a guy of baggage, trouble player, a gamble.
Right, and he's been wonderful too.
50 goals in his Juventus career.
Yeah, and he's been wonderful. And there's been no sort of hint of, you know, the problems that he had at Manchester City or anything like that. He's been a model sort of professional. So that's worked out well too. So, yeah.
Although there was a press conference 2 weeks ago with Tevez, and he was saying how he is going to be leaving for Boca Juniors in the summer. But then I've heard nothing since.
Yeah.
And Juve last week said, no, we still hope to keep him next year. So
yeah.
Who knows what's happening there?
Who knows?
Could be leverage on Tevez's part.
Could
get more money. But hey, listen, I don't know what he's on at Juventus, but he's clearly proven that he's still able to play at this level, at
absolutely
a very high level. And he's been brilliant. All right, let's switch to the Premier League weekend. The top is all boring, right? Who cares? Top four is pretty much decided now. You know, Liverpool
yes
can't catch Man United unless they win both games and United lose both games and they recover things like a 20 goal differential edge or something. So that's done.
That's done.
That's done, that battle. It's at the bottom. There's one spot left. QPR's down. Burnley's down. Mm-hmm. Poor Burnley. Lovely little story.
Yeah, that is too bad.
Two teams going down with such different narratives around them, aren't they?
Very much so.
Burnley is a little team that fought really hard, competed every match, left it all on the field, and then you got QPR, really is a overpaid bunch of mercenaries.
Right.
Who just don't care. It's a real shame. But who's going to go down with them? Hull losing to Burnley put Hull in the relegation zone. They are at Tottenham and then against United to end the season. Sunderland won. Wow. Again, beat Everton 2-0. They've jumped safe. They're at Leicester. Sorry, against Leicester at home. Then they're at Arsenal, then at Chelsea to end the season. So Leicester's essentially a must-win for Sunderland if they hope to remain alive. Newcastle, they're, I think, 2 points clear. Tied West Brom. I think they've done enough. I can't see either Sunderland or Hull doing enough to recoup 2 points on Newcastle. I just don't see it.
Mm.
And they've got a much easier running as well. So it's coming down to it. Do you care about the relegation?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I know you obviously follow it, right? But, I mean, what are you thinking? What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, hats off to Leicester, because I think, had we been having this discussion in March, we'd be talking about them as sure candidates for relegation.
I think we did.
And we did. And I think the fact that, you know, they've gone on this, you know, quite remarkable run, and as much as people might not like Nigel Pearson, because he's kind of an ornery guy, you got to give him credit. I think this is really fantastic. And this is, you know, it's the kind of story that you love about a team that just seems destined for the drop, coming out of nowhere and finding that second gear. And
6 wins out of the past 7 games.
That's
staggering,
know,
given their record prior to that.
Like, who saw that? No one could have possibly have foreseen
that. As their manager's imploding as well, making a fool of himself, you know, it's all falling apart. But maybe that was a little smokescreen.
Maybe.
I mean, listen, he can say that now, and who can doubt him?
Yeah, maybe.
You know, I was trying to deflect tension, pressure off my team.
Yeah.
Look at me, I'm the idiot. Meanwhile, they just go about their business. Hey, listen, the results speak for themselves.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, as I said, I think it's a fantastic story. I mean, I disagree about Newcastle. I don't think they're safe at all.
No.
I think, who do they have to play still?
I will just check that. It's winnable. Well, not winnable
for
them.
But that's the point, James. There's no winnable games with them. I mean, they're on this, I think it's 9-game winless run now.
Yeah, 8 losses and a draw this weekend.
Right. It's only 2 points safe. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that they're going to stay up. That team just seems in a mess, and we've seen it. They're just not good enough. Like, they're not.
Do you blame John Carver at all? Or do you think he inherited a broken
squad? No, I think he just inherited a broken squad. If I blame anything, it's Mike Riley. I mean,
QPR?
Yeah, yeah, the Newcastle's owner.
Mike Ashley. So Newcastle are at QPR. Next game.
Okay.
And then they finish the season at home against West Ham.
Okay. Well.
Right. So that's what I mean. There's got to be a point in there, hasn't there? And a point should be enough.
But I don't take anything for granted with this Newcastle team, just the way they play. They've been dreadful. They're not good enough. They don't have good enough players. They never really replace Johan Gabay. I don't think defensively they're much to sniff at. And I think you're talking about needing a complete overhaul in the offseason. About, you know, at least 9 or 10 or 11, 12 players.
Well, John Carver, last week he made that infamous quote, "I think I'm the best coach in the Premier League," right? Now, he actually revisited that this weekend and said, listen, just about that quote,
right?
When I play golf, I think I'm the best golfer in the world. When I play tennis, I'm the best tennis player in the world. That's just my mentality.
Right.
It was said tongue in cheek, but I have to believe that I'm the best in the world. So I get that. I mean, I think it's very unfair to, you know, characterize John Carver as this idiot moron guy who's just lost a plot and shouldn't be at this level. It's not fair.
Right.
Maybe he shouldn't be a manager, but he's proven to be a very good coach over his career.
Yes.
And he says some things that, you know, people love to kick a guy when he's down.
Right.
Right. So I hope he can move on. And I'm sure he's leaving Newcastle, which is sad because it's his boyhood club, this summer, but I'm sure he'll get a job somewhere else.
John speaks off the cuff, and I know this from my time covering him at Toronto FC, where, believe me, he spoke off the cuff plenty. So I don't hold it against him. I mean, yeah, it was a silly thing to say, but it's not the end of the world.
It isn't. Of course not. But I just think they've done enough to survive. I think Hull are probably going down at this point.
Yeah, that looks...
That Burnley result was just crippling, and I feel for Steve Bruce, because is there a nicer guy in the Premier League than Steve Bruce? If we can judge a guy from his post-game press conferences and pre-game press conferences, he's like a big cuddly teddy bear.
I guess.
He really is.
I like Roberto Martinez.
He's pretty nice too. But he seems more strategic. Like, he's a little bit more self-absorbed in that he's got a career path. Whereas I think Steve Bruce, just, you know, jovial manager, had a great career, just bouncing around club to club. Because his resume isn't that good. Look at his clubs, right? He hasn't really done great for too long at many clubs, be it Birmingham, Sunderland.
Well, maybe that's the problem.
Well, yeah, he's not good enough. Right, I'm just saying, you know, is he just living on his name?
Oh, I think so.
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah, absolutely.
If his name was Gary Monk, for example, he wouldn't be managing right now.
No, I don't think so. I think he's largely, it's built on his reputation as a player, because, as you said, James, when you look at his actual CV as a manager, it's not impressive.
It's not great. Let me just dig it up here. Exactly.
How many times has he been relegated?
Well, it's more than once. Right. Sure, is it? Is it more than once? Let's find out.
Like, I don't think
he took Birmingham down, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he
mid-table mid-season?
Yeah. I mean, regardless, he doesn't have the best record.
Well, he's managed a lot of clubs. He's managed Sheffield United, Huddersfield, Wigan, Crystal Palace, Birmingham, Wigan again, Sunderland, and Hull. And the longest stint was Birmingham for 6 years. Prior to that, we're talking like 1 year, 2 years here, 2 years there. And let's see... Here we go, manager. Okay, so at Birmingham, you know what?
It's hard to tell. Okay.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. But yeah, he's gone down.
He's had disappointment in his career.
He hasn't got much success.
Exactly.
Let's put it that way, shall we?
I think that's a fair thing.
I think often he's fired mid-season, so he doesn't actually take a team down, but he's a big part of the
problem. Well, but he's a big part of the problem, yeah.
He keeps signing his son, Alex Bruce. That's probably the issue.
There you go.
Yeah. Bill, interesting anyway. Switching to MLS.
You don't want to talk about Gerrard?
Oh, yes. Well, why not? The whole Chelsea being applauded off and those brilliant post-match comments?
I don't know. Did you not think... I don't know.
You know what? It's easy for us to say on our high horse, he should have shown more class to the Chelsea support who did applaud him.
I mean...
They hammered him. And they've hammered him for years.
But it's banter, James.
And so he's just giving a bit of banter too, is he not? We should fill in the audience here. So Steven Gerrard, all game long against Chelsea, he's being abused, and they've got these signs, you know, beware slippery surface, you know, essentially going back to last season, the famous game where he slipped and Chelsea got the goal, Demba Ba. And he gets subbed off, and actually the Chelsea faithful, they stand, they applaud him.
Jose Mourinho
applauds him, classy, very classy, and post-match he's asked about it. And he goes, well, I was happy about my fans supporting. You know, they've been giving it to me all game long. Nice to see them show up for once. Nice little slap in the face. I don't mind it.
I think he could have been more gracious about
it. Sure, he could have been. But it's easy to say that when we haven't had 40,000 people calling me every name under the sun through 90 minutes of football. Right?
Meh. I don't know. I just... Not that it was a classless thing to do, but I think you can kind of rise above it and just be a little bit gracious.
Perhaps.
That's all.
It was a good, though, post-match interview, which you can't often say.
I guess.
It's interesting. We're discussing it. How often do we rediscuss post-match interviews?
Unless
it's Nigel Pearson.
Right. Well, that's true.
Right? Or some of the great characters in the game, right? Not often does a player give you anything, right?
Right. Or Neil Warnock.
Or Neil Warnock's classic. Yeah, Ian Holloway.
Holloway's a great example.
Brilliant. There's some good managers, right?
Yeah.
But generally speaking, players, you know, just toe the company line, right?
Yeah. I found it more interesting what he said about sort of the changes that Liverpool need to make about...
Spend money, right?
Yeah, and just about, you know, what they have to do to be more competitive next year. So I found that far more intriguing and far more interesting.
He did, though, say that he gave Mourinho a lot of compliments, though.
Oh, absolutely.
The only reason he even considered leaving was because of Jose Mourinho.
Right, yeah.
So he gave a bit of love there as well.
Yeah, that was interesting, too. Yeah.
Still, it was his last time at Stamford Bridge until he comes back on loan.
On loan, yeah, I was going to say.
Don't do it, Stevie. Please don't do it.
Wouldn't come back to Liverpool. Wouldn't be surprised, James.
Not at all. Of course, there's every chance he'll do that, but it'll be a real shame.
Yeah.
Anyway, next game's at Palace. Oh, sorry, against Palace at Anfield. His last game as a Red at home.
Mm.
It's going to be emotional.
I would think so.
For the faithful there, no matter what. And he scored a goal this past weekend, too.
Yeah, which is good.
Back-to-back games.
Good
now.
For him.
Yeah. Too little too late, though, unfortunately. See Sturridge out for 5 months.
Yeah.
Hip surgery, going to miss a start next season.
Wow. Which, bad news for England, too. I mean, not that they're in trouble.
No,
not
but still, it's bad
still,
news. Oh, yeah. You want to know what your top team is, right? But they've got Harry Kane now, right? When Sturridge was breaking through,
they
had no Harry Kane.
That's true.
He's a solution, right?
Yeah.
He's something. Dwayne De Rosario retires. Officially.
Yeah, via Instagram post.
Via Instagram. Yeah, D-Ro is the king of social media, right? He knows how it's played.
I guess I shouldn't be surprised by that. So. No. I'm not passing judgment. I'm just whatever. It's, yeah, it's different.
He's a modern man.
Yeah, there you go.
But what is D-Ro's legacy?
I think it's a legacy of being one of the best players ever to play in MLS, of being a loyal servant to Canadian soccer. He, you know, Canada's all-time leading scorer. Played for Canada at times where it was detrimental to his professional career, like a lot of Canadians. He's not unique in that perspective, but it certainly didn't help his career at times. So I give him nothing but plaudits. I mean, yes, there's the whole check signing thing and that whole sort of ugly scenario, that ugly scene, but it doesn't dismiss the fact that he was a fantastic player both for Canada and at MLS level. As I said, I would rank him top five players in the history of MLS.
You kind of wish he never came to TFC, don't you? On paper, it could have been wonderful, but it just didn't work out. He came in a dreadful time for the club.
Right.
And was just caught up in that.
Right.
Right? So it's sad. I mean, it was the end of the Mo Johnston era.
Yeah.
When he first came, right? Last year, he was clearly unable to compete at that level.
Right.
And I hope people don't remember him for those performances, because I agree with you. At his best, he was graceful out there. He was a wonderful player. And as far as MLS is concerned, one of the greats, an MVP.
MVP on a losing team.
On a losing team, yeah.
Yeah.
Scored some great goals.
He was such a dynamic player,
Shake
too.
And bake, you know.
He had a lot of life and character to him. Sometimes a little bit too much. But no, nothing but props to him. I thought he was a fantastic footballer for, as I said, both for club and country.
Yep. TFC home opener.
Oh boy.
Well, the stadium looks good, I guess. Somewhat. It's not quite finished yet, is it?
I pity, and I wrote this in my piece yesterday, so I pity the poor moms who spent their Mother's Day at that game.
Timing. Scheduling.
Yeah. That's another story. Yeah. That's another story. But like the dunderhead sons and husbands,
tickets for
like,
TFC.
Yeah, give your heads a shake for bringing your moms and your girlfriends and your wives out. Like that was just, why would you subject them to that?
Yeah,
yeah. But no, it was just a terrible show.
Home opener, and you put in that first half performance.
Yeah,
what is going on with that club?
Yeah, it was. And that's the key, James. I think you hit it on there. I'm not so disappointed with the result, a 2-1 loss. I'm more disappointed with the performance because it was so timid and shy and gutless, to be perfectly frank. I know that the sort of defensive posture that they've used the last two games has worked out well, but
the last two games are terrible teams.
Right.
Terrible teams.
This was an occasion, you know, where you've been away from home for a long time, you need to reconnect with your fan base. You got to show a little bit more on the attacking end. And to only really turn it on after going 2-0 down after 77 minutes, I mean, that's,
yeah,
you know.
And they arrive on the back of two wins, right? 9 points from a road trip, which was acceptable from a point standpoint. But if you break it down and the performances in Orlando and Philly, these abominations of teams.
Yeah.
With all respect to Orlando, we know why they're an expansion team, right?
Right.
But, you know, they're six of those points.
Yeah.
And you think, okay, well, you know, you can only play who's ahead of you, mm-hmm. right? So let's find out what they can do at home. Put in a good effort.
Effort. against a winnable or against a beatable Houston
yeah,
team. Let's
precisely
be
what lost four straight games, didn't they?
Well, they were winless in
winless,
four,
yeah, sorry.
And they were second bottom of the Western Conference. So this was a winnable game, and they just, as I said, out hustled and outworked and yeah. outplayed.
And now it's off to New England next weekend.
Yeah,
on Sportsnet.
Yes, on Saturday. The other concerning thing for me too is this was not Michael Bradley's finest moment.
Nope.
I thought he had a poor game. Obviously gave away, committed the foul that led to the penalty, which led to the first goal. And credit to him, he kind of owned up to it afterwards in the first talking to reporters after the game. And on the second game, on the second goal, I mean, he wasn't the only one culpable, but he did have a hand to play in that goal because picture this. Toronto FC, they have a throw in 80 yards from their goal. They manage to cough up the ball, and then Gilles Barnes makes this marvelous run, blows by Bradley, blows by, yeah. I think, Hagelin and someone else, and then lays it on for Will Bruin. But, I mean, how do you concede a goal like that?
Yeah.
80 yards from your own net off a throw and after losing it on a throw, and like, it's unacceptable.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. Well, that's a word that's commonly used with Toronto FC, unfortunately.
Right.
Up and down, the roller coaster continues. They might win the next two games, and then all is right at TFC, isn't it?
It hurts my, you know, I shouldn't say this, but it hurts my head to think about this team sometimes.
It should hurt, yeah, because you have covered it closer than anyone for the last 8 bloody years.
Yeah.
You know? And I covered it very closely for a long time there as well, the last year or so, less closely.
Right.
Because my work takes me elsewhere, thank God.
Yes.
But wow.
I need therapy, I think.
Yeah, you need something, like... man. I would really consider a very serious drinking addiction. It would probably help.
I'll have to consider that.
Yeah, post-match.
Lately, I've been kind of thinking a move to Vancouver so I can cover a proper MLS team.
That'd be a good idea, yeah. That'd Plus, you're in Vancouver, which is pretty fantastic.
Yes.
So. Although you'd probably prefer Montreal, wouldn't you?
I like Montreal too. I don't like their winners though, so I don't think I could live there.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
And their winners are worse than ours.
Yeah, but you're going there to cover soccer.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Although their bloody Champions League runs, you play some pretty cold weather in some
yes,
of those games.
That's true too. But yeah, as I said, getting back to Toronto, it was just a dire, limp effort, and it just the sense of occasion really got away from them. This was a spoiled or an opportunity that they let get away from them, I think.
And so. talking to some guys just before this off air, and you know they're saying what. Was kind of damning is they brought on the younger, cheaper options in the second half, and they actually changed the game.
Yeah, Osorio and
Osorio,
Warner.
Osorio, very good.
Kind of came in. Osorio, I thought, on the goal he created for Jose Aldador was brilliant because he...
Perfect ball in.
Yeah, perfect ball in, and just the way he kind of created space for himself to get that cross in was really a dynamic piece of play. So I'll be interested to see if that and the way he kind of rejuvenated the team mm-hmm. will lead to you know more playing time or even a starting role because I thought he was great. The other positive, too, was Chris Konopka, the backup goalkeeper, was sensational. I mean, he made 2 saves before you know that really kept TFC in the game in the first half, then saved the penalty, couldn't you know, stop the rebound, but fair play to him. And then nearly scored the equalizer in injury time. He was left unmarked in the penalty box because he was coming up and delivered a powerful header, but he kind of drove it into the ground and then it went up over the crossbar. If he had just nailed it straight forward, it would have gone into the net.
Want to hear a true, I'll admit something quite embarrassing here. So I couldn't get to the game yesterday,
right?
So I PVR'd it and I watched it last night. And remember last time I spoke to you, I forget what game it was. Maybe Vancouver, actually, the opener. And I PVR'd that game as well.
Did you?
And I didn't set the PVR long enough. Well, I set the window it was supposed to be in, but I didn't set the next, you know, to cover myself just in case.
Did you not do
that
again?
And lo and behold, I didn't do it again.
James!
So 5 minutes from the end of the game, again, it cuts off. Oh, for Christ's sake, I'm staying up late to watch this damn thing. You know, wife's gone to bed. You know, PVRing it.
And it cuts off.
And it cuts off. Yeah. I you know, commit all that time to it, past my bedtime. And I don't even get to see the final whistle.
Tell you, man. Just set it.
I know.
Set it half an hour before and
after. I do that for Coronation Street, but for some reason I don't do it for TFC.
Does Coronation Street ever run over? Like, why would it?
It has in the past a couple of times.
Oh, has it? Okay.
Yeah, I don't know why. But Coro's just far more rewarding than watching TFC. You know, I know there's going to be an end that might upset me.
Right.
But generally speaking, I'll look forward to the next episode. I never look forward to the next episode of TFC.
Well. I don't know what to say. I got no snappy comeback.
All right. Well, we're out of time. This week, on Sportsnet, 2:30 Eastern, on Tuesday and Wednesday, Champions League.
Yes.
Don't forget that. Europa League on Thursday as well.
Yes. Amway Canadian Championship on Wednesday night. Yep. We're showing both games.
Mm-hmm.
And then a busy EPL weekend again.
Yep, that's
and
right.
And the TFC game we're
and
showing.
And TFC,
on.
My God, it never ends.
Yeah, so go to sportsnet.ca and consult the broadcast schedule. And also go to sportsnet.ca. We'll have in-depth preview coverage of all that stuff.
Great piece by Sam Gregory again today. About,
today, the analytics piece,
about Gareth Bale and how we should have seen this decline coming.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff.
Very good piece.
Sam makes analytics interesting to me. Which
he
is
does.
Something because I generally find them abhorrently boring.
Well, what I like about him is his writing style is it's very...
An idiot can understand it.
Well, I find other analytic writers are very just tunneled vision and like, this is gospel. This mm-hmm. is, and they kind of speak down to people. And I don't think Sam does that. He just sort of presents the case for analytics and he does it in a very respectful way. And it's not sort of authoritative.
No.
Well, authoritative isn't the right word. It's not sort of over the top. Snarky or, you know, just...
There's no arrogance.
No, there's no arrogance. There you go. That's right? What I'm looking
just,
for. Exactly.
This is an option to consider.
Right, exactly.
These numbers don't lie. Use this information as
right.
you will.
Exactly.
But it's not gospel, like you said.
Right. And I think that I appreciate Sam's approach to that, and that's kind of why I hired him. So yep. There you go.
Well, because all down to you, J-Mo.
Exactly. I get all the credit.
All right. Well, hope you enjoyed that one. That's the Soccer Central podcast. Our thanks to Graham Ruffin. Don't forget the worst version of this podcast, Thursday's edition. We'll come back on this Thursday with Thomas Dobby, maybe John Molinaro. We're not sure yet.
Maybe.
Possibly.
Yes.
Dunlop's away again. So he's dead to us anyway. Hope you enjoyed that, everyone. Speak to you soon.